Best-selling novels are usually a safe bet for Hollywood. The prospect of a built-in audience looking to see their favorite characters come alive on screen is enticement enough for a film industry adverse to risk. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The best-selling novel, The Girl on the Train, is now the much-anticipated film of the same title, and here to discuss this latest theatrical release and some recommended titles for home viewing, I'm happy to have back on the program frequent On Film contributor Jean Creel. Good morning, Jean.
Morning, Jack. Thank you.
Great to see you. You are one of the millions of viewers that have read the book The Girl on the Train, and now it's out in film form. Set us up. What did you think of this film?
Well, for those who haven't seen it or read the book, I'll give a short synopsis. Rachel, the main character, takes the train to and from work every day. The train passes through the neighborhood where she used to live with her husband, and she's now reeling from that broken marriage and drinking way too much. But as she passes through, she also becomes fixated on a house a few doors down from her ex-husband, where he now lives with his new wife and baby. And she sees the couple, Scott and Megan, and envisions them as the perfect couple, the ideal couple. They represent the love and the life and the marriage that she once had and has now lost. But as Rachel begins to insinuate herself into the lives of these families, the audience begins to wonder what is real, what is fiction. Is Rachel a stalker? Is she unstable? Might she do harm to either of these families? The problem, of course, is that as Rachel is somewhat fantasizing, is she hallucinating? This is one of the questions. But when the seemingly perfect Megan goes missing, suspicion does fall on Rachel. And the film's suspense builds as the different parts of the puzzle are slowly revealed through flashbacks and through the intertwining of the three main characters, the three women, Rachel, Megan, and Anna.
This is what I like to think of as a puzzle film. It's a thriller mystery that scrambles a lot of the information, and you're not sure whose point of view to trust. And as the film goes along, this particular film is told, I presume, like the book, in non-linear fashion. So we're jumping back and forth in time between these different characters' perspectives. So you're constantly having to update what you think is happening and what's really important to follow as you put together this mystery of this missing woman, which is fun in and of itself.
However, right.
My biggest thing with puzzle films is that frequently they're not worth watching again once you know how to solve them.
Right. Once you know the Rubik's Cube, you know, you move on. But actually, I did read the novel, a hugely popular novel by Paula Hawkins, which, of course, followed the success of the blockbuster of that genre, namely Gone Girl.
Right.
And like that novel, Girl on the Train is told in the first-person narrator, which is where we have Rachel. And in the film, you see it as her voiceovers. But actually, in the novel, all three of the main female characters are doing a first-person narration. Each chapter is headed Megan or Anna or Rachel. And it's a great literary device, but I guess they struggled to translate that to the film, and so we only wind up with Rachel's perspective as a voiceover. But anytime you have a first-person narrator, you do need to retain a bit of caution. Because
skepticism.
They can be unreliable.
And particularly when they're drunk all the time.
And she's usually drunk. Yes, she is. And I think the novel in that regard bests the film here because you do see the development of the characters more clearly, I think, through their narration. Megan and Anna's innermost thoughts and fears and concerns helps flesh out their character, which I think is a little lacking in the film.
Yeah, this is a middling film for me. It's not a bad film. It's competently told, but it's there's just not a lot there to return to. And the example being Gone Girl that you mentioned, which is a David Fincher film that you know I could watch multiple times, even knowing where the twists are and what the surprise endings are. This film, I'm not so sure about. Those who have read the book, I'm sure they will be compelled to go see the film because you want to see it come alive
true,
on the screen.
True.
But for me, someone who has not read the book, it just felt a little flat and missed some opportunities there. And maybe those extra narrations would have been an interesting twist. There are some things cinematically going on, though, that I hope viewers will look for. You know, I noticed the first few images we get in this film are out of focus or blurred, and this is really a film about blurred perceptions and this main character who spends most of the film drunk or questioning what she has seen or how she's perceiving reality. And that extends to the audience, who's being manipulated also by the director and the filmmakers of how we should perceive the story. And each time we get a little piece of detail, it changes the puzzle for us.
Right. And I think that caution about first-person narration, being that they're unreliable, one of the dominant themes throughout the film and the novel is lying. Everybody lies. They lie to themselves. They lie to each other. It's not a question of who's lying. It's who's telling the truth.
Even though it's not a great film, it was really refreshing to see a film that is almost solely based on female characters. You know, and they're not 18 or 22. Mm-hmm. These are women beginning almost in their middling years, not quite, and played by Emily Blunt and Hayley Bennett and Rebecca Ferguson, who are the first triangle. But there's also these wonderful surrounding characters played by Allison Janney and Lisa Kudrow and Laura Prepon, mostly women in this film. I really wish they'd spent a little more time with the supporting characters too, particularly Allison Janney. We both were discussing before the show. She plays the detective that's overseeing the investigation of this missing woman. And not to belabor the Gone Girl analogy, but the female detective in that film has so much more to work with. And Janey here is a fairly passive character that could have been so rich.
Right, right. And I think comparisons are inevitable, and it's fine. It is an interesting genre. Well, I'm sure we'll probably see more of it in the future. And Emily Blunt, I do have to give a shout out for her. Sure, her performance is, it must have been difficult to play such a tedious character who initially is very unsympathetic,
yes,
and it takes a lot to develop and get to the point where you do feel for her. But her performance is wonderful.
It is, and watching her and how the filmmaker often uses her in these subtle doubling of images where you see her in mirrors and reflected in windows and other shiny surfaces where, you know, multiple images of her face overlaps slightly. The split that's going on in her and questioning just who she is and what she really understands, and also the use of framing devices and windows,
yes,
and you know, how we as an audience are looking into these lives as well and trying to piece together with very little detail. We manufacture lives, and that's what she's doing in the film too. So there are some things, you know, worth recommending to look for in this film.
Oh, sure.
But I just can't quite get there as far as being a completely satisfying experience.
Right.
But ultimately, if this is a story about Emily Blunt, what she sees through a passing train, and the film itself rarely rises above a transitory pleasure of watching images go by. My pick for streaming, though, is one I can't believe I missed. It's called the Worriker Trilogy. Doesn't really trip off the tongue. Worriker. These were three films that were made by the BBC and played 2 years ago on PBS Masterpiece Contemporary. And this is a spy story that's really in the mode of early John le Carré, which is to say that it's extremely smart, globe-hopping, full of intrigue and insights into our present intelligence states, and almost devoid of action. And that's where the real pleasure is. There is so much great dialogue and acting. It has a who's who of actors. Bill Nighy plays this career MI5 spy and analyst sort of at the end of his career, who finds himself in the middle of a conspiracy involving the British Prime Minister and offshore arms dealers and resort developers and money laundering and the CIA and black sites. It just goes on and on. It's just literally ripped from our current day headlines. But it's all an original story that was put together by the writer and director David Hare in Britain. And there's a global manhunt. But this is not one of those spy films that we're used to on this side of the Atlantic, Matt Damon, Bourne films. There's really almost no pyrotechnics, and they trade that for tradecraft, and it's really about intelligence over muscle. And he's just surrounded by this incredible cast that includes Helena Bonham Carter, Rachel Weisz, Ralph Fiennes, Christopher Walken. To see Bill Nighy and Christopher Walken have a beer together and just talk is worth the price of admission, which is free if you go to pbs.org. Winona Ryder's in it, Judy Davis, Michael Gambon. The list just literally goes on and on. It's just a pleasure to watch the title sequence with all of their names pop up. So this is really a set of films. It's about the strain of keeping secrets and the disarray of the world in which we don't know exactly who our enemies are anymore and how best to fight them. And just beautifully shot. And it's substantial and rewarding. It's really, to me, everything that I've been looking for lately on the big screen. And it could have easily been theatrical, but these three films are you can find on PBS.org as well as Amazon and other streaming services. I think you've got also another British recommendation.
Right, right. And I'm glad that you mentioned the two high points of dialogue and acting, because that's truly what you see represented in The Dresser. The Dresser is a BBC production. It's streaming on Amazon right now and also available on DVD. It's actually a film of a play by Ronald Harwood. And this 2015 film is a remake of the 1983 film that starred Tom Courtney and Albert Finney. Mm. In this film, Ian McKellen plays the title role, the dresser, basically the personal assistant to Sir Anthony Hopkins, who is the aging Shakespearean drama actor. And the film is set during World War II, and this small Shakespearean troupe is bringing Shakespeare plays to the rural areas using mostly second-rate casts because, of course, most able-bodied persons are off involved in the war effort. And the real drama, though, lies in the very complex relationship between Ian McKellen as the dresser to Anthony Hopkins, whose expertise and stamina and ability to perform night after night is rapidly diminishing. The entire film takes place in one evening before and after the performance of King Lear. And it's a very poignant film about aging and loneliness and unrequited love and the end of an era. Mm. But again, the beauty of it is the dialogue and watching the very intimate performances of Ian McKellen and Anthony Hopkins. They're consummate actors.
Yeah. Two of the greats.
Yes, two of the greats. And it's pretty much a two-person film.
Well, it's interesting that we would both pick films that spotlight the kinds of roles and characters and actors who can't seem to find good, solid work anymore.
That's right. That's right. And many of them are getting older. And as you can see, there are roles out there for these people. And
that apparently, are not supervillains or fantasy characters.
Right. Uh-huh. And apparently Anthony Hopkins is the one who really pushed for this production.
Well, two excellent choices, and it sounds like we're both on the fence about The Girl on the Train, but still enjoyable, I think.
Oh, definitely. It'll make a lot of money.
Well, thanks for coming in, and always nice to chat films with you, Jean.
Thank you, Chuck.
I've been discussing several movies available in theaters or for home viewing with frequent on-film contributor Jean Creel. The new film, The Girl on the Train, is currently screening at local theaters and is based upon the best-selling novel of the same name. We've also discussed the recommended films The Work or Trilogy, produced by the BBC in 2011 and 2014, and the 2015 BBC film The Dresser, starring Anthony Hopkins and Ian McKellen. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.